This week on Two Dynamite Dudes, Marcus and I discuss Christian Cage's in-ring debut, QT Marshall forming an evil nightmare family of his own, Inner Circle's locker room ambush against the Pinnacle, the Young Bucks aligning with Jon Moxley, and that wild ending to none other than Arcade Anarchy. What'd you guys think? Good? Bad? Well, you know, hook up your video game system, because it is time for two Dynamite Dudes. With attitude. What's up, everybody? I am Marcus D'Angelo, and I am joined here by my slapdick brother, Dominic D'Angelo of WrestleZone.com, and we are two Dynamite Dudes with attitudes.
Hey, a little bit more. This is Dominic. Live. We're live.
Dominic, fuck you. So, guys, we're here every week to talk about AEW Dynamite, and this week, Dominic, some highs, some lows, and quite a show. All right.
Quite a show, huh?
Yeah. It was not, I don't mean that all positive either, as our listeners will find out here. But let's go ahead and
Real quick, Mark, while people start coming in and everything, talk about, we had our first live version of WCW Rewritten last night. How do you think it went?
That is true. And I think it went really well, man. We got a lot of good feedback. It was cool getting to kind of talk with people and hear people's thoughts and feelings and suggestions along the way. Stuff that you and I haven't really gotten to do here before. So, it was really cool. And I hope we can do more live shows with both WCW Rewritten and Two Dynamite Dudes, which we're doing right now.
Yeah, it should be a good show here. If you want, get in on the conversation. Send us a comment. We'll read them on air. We interact. We'll definitely do a question and answer segment at the end if you guys we cultivate enough people listening in. I know SmackDown's on right now, but hey, this is an AEW show. Let's discuss a little AEW going.
You know, SmackDown hasn't been good for a very long time.
You missed the days of the fist on the stage.
Yeah. I miss those days. I miss the days of like the old school with like the giant circles as people come out. That was like the original SmackDown set. You know what, guys? If you're watching SmackDown right now, that's cool. Everybody's into their own thing. Why don't you just go ahead and mute that bitch?
Yeah, like crank down the volume a little bit. You know, if you're on an old Zenith, just turn down with the notches a little bit.
Yeah, just go ahead and mute that sumbitch. Give us a listen because I can guarantee we're going to be more interesting. So Dominic, let's get moving on this thing. Let's start out with I don't know, probably the biggest marquee match in my opinion on this thing.
Okay.
I'm not going to count arcade craziness because I think that's what you thought I was going to say.
That's what I thought you were going to say.
No, I mean the real marquee match here should have been and could have been Kenny Omega with the Good Brothers taking on the Laredo Kid and the Lucha Bros. Kind of a clusterfuck at times, for sure. There's no doubting that, but it was also still it was a pretty fun match. And let me tell you, the finish more than made up for it. Kenny Omega hit a devastating looking V trigger on the Laredo Kid at the end, and then put him down with the One Winged Angel. I love that nobody kicks out of the One Winged Angel, and I love this version of Kenny Omega. He is really ascending.
Yeah, I was kind of bummed we didn't get to see more of him cut like a promo this week. You know, he was just in action for the most part, which I mean, I think I would really like to see more of Kenny's persona going right now. I know Dirty Don Callis there kind of amps up the volume there and makes it more and kind of is not almost a surrogate in a way for him speaking, you know, his mouthpiece at certain times. But I think, you know, obviously with Kenny and being in the mix and everything like that, I would like to see more of him get mixed up. But yeah, it was a really good match. I think it just, you know, in comparison to like the multi-man tag matches that we do see on Dynamite, like these tell a story, like for the competitors in the ring. like as crazy and fast paced and sometimes like messy that they can be. It's just like with sheer athleticism, but like somebody that like it gave Laredo Kid a chance to highlight himself in a lot of ways. And like him just fighting back against Kenny Omega and then them isolating him for such a long time in the ring too. Like, you know, he had to deal with Doc Gallows and Carl Anderson and Kenny. And it's just like so many adversaries, and really gave a chance for Laredo Kid to highlight himself even further. And then really, really cool spots that happened. I really like the, it was nearing the end of the match where I think it was like Kenny was bringing Laredo Kid back into the ring or something. And then just out of nowhere comes Rey Fénix running on the ropes and just kicks Kenny. Like it was just such a great spot. And really told some made the match very, very engaging, and ultimately makes sense too. And Kenny's, you know, getting the pinfall and the win and everything made total sense.
Yeah, you know, I don't like this new thing in wrestling, and this is probably just me. You know, just like guys who watch 70s wrestling probably had a lot of complaints about 90s wrestling. But like, I don't like this new thing in wrestling where it's like they're setting up a spot with multiple people, like a tag team versus a tag team, and it all has to be like synchronized. All of it has to happen at the same time. I just think it's silly.
It is. Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
And we saw a lot of that crap in this match. So really not a thing that I was into. So yeah, it was not the best in my opinion because of those reasons, and because of like this constant need to have people like gather on the outside of the ring. It's like, okay, now is the moment. Everybody gather up. Somebody's about to come flying over. So that kind of stuff gets on my nerves. But I mean, by and large, man, you can't argue that the match was entertaining. It was certainly entertaining. And yeah, I mean, Kenny Omega, like I said, ascending upwards, dude. He is rising to the challenge of being the AEW champion.
Yeah, I am with you. Like, you know, some of this, it's the multi-man tag matches, they are like, in the orchestration of it, it can get to you a little bit. It can get to you a little bit. And it does even in these like big name matches with these guys. Like, you know, how great is it when you get to see a lot of this? Like if there were just even a two like person tag match or one-on-one, like when it's Rey Fénix and Matt Jackson, like they told a great story. When it's like Kenny Omega versus like, who do you fight? He just had a singles match. Oh, Evan, Matt Sydal. I can't believe I still call him Evan Bourne. But when they have those kind of singles matches, that conveys a message a lot better than what these multi-man tag matches do, where you're trying to play catch up. And, you know, but for a multi-man tag match, I thought this one was very good. Obviously it has its hiccups with the, you know, orchestration and stuff, but ultimately, like, I did like it.
Yeah. Hey, let me say, we just got a nice little message here from, I don't want to butcher your name, dude. It looks like Balogun.
Yeah,
doesn't like missing the show for anything. We love you too, man. Thanks for tuning in. Yeah, it's good to know we got some faithful listeners who'd rather not watch SmackDown. All right, do you have anything else to say about that match? I mean, at the end, I will say it was a little bit weird. We've got Moxley coming out with the Young Bucks, which, like, to me, it just doesn't pass the eye test, right? You've got Jon Moxley, who's like this gritty, like this dude who you'd find in a bar, you know what I mean? At like 1:30, who's just like ready to fight at any given moment. And then it's just like, oh, the Young Bucks, and they come out and there's like cannons with money coming out of them. And you know, they wear like the stuff on their boots and they super kick people and it's all fun and aw shucks. Like to me, it just didn't really fit, didn't pass the eye test, but I understand it. You know, they're trying to push this initiative forward that is kind of like the Young Bucks against Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers. Now, here's the move, Dominic, before I let you weigh in. The move is that you turn them heel and have them beat the crap out of Jon Moxley next week.
So you're still about the heel turn.
Yeah, I don't think there's any other way. I mean, look, earlier in the night, we've got Don Callis kind of having like a face-to-face with Matt Jackson. Mm-hmm. He slaps Matt Jackson, and Matt Jackson don't do shit.
He grabs him.
Right. And then Don Callis calls him out on it. He's like, you're spineless or whatever he said. Oh, he's like, you're pathetic.
Ron said some really funny shit there, though, like at the beginning. What was it? I'm trying to think. He was just like, he was in like pure like car salesman form right there, like to start that off.
He was, but let me tell you, man, like Don Callis is getting over more than Matt Jackson there. Like Matt Jackson is coming off like, so he wasn't likable to me in the first place. And now it's more like, it's like, not only is he not likable, not only it can we not tell if he's a babyface or a heel, not only does he seem to put himself over, but then also he's confronted by a middle-aged man and he sort of backs off.
Hey, well, you know, you can pitch it too that like the Jackson brothers, I mean, they didn't, when they kicked Tony Schiavone, and they didn't when they kicked Alex Marvez. But, like, you can kind of pitch that maybe they're kind of, like, questioning what they were doing previously and going back on it. I mean, obviously, I'd like that to be conveyed a little bit better. But, you know, if you're going that route, yeah, it definitely – that's a good point, though, Marcus. It does lead it up to, like, some questions. Like, hey, what the hell is this all about? Where is this going? Because I just more – I just thought about it more in the lines of, okay, they're baby faces and they're sticking that out. And maybe even at the end of that match, it kind of conveyed it more, you know, okay, that they are baby faces. But hey, they still leave that strand open that this is a very good possibility that they could be screwing Moxley over. And, you know, Moxley's promo, too, if you notice, too, he was pissed off about a lot of things. And one of those was that he still owed something to the Young Bucks. He didn't like that.
And, yeah.
And he was also pissed off about what? There was something else like random he was kind of pissed off about. But otherwise, yes. So it kind of does set it up for that. Unlikely alliance, the juxtaposition of the Young Bucks, yeah, teaming with somebody like Mox, you know, it could go either way. It really could.
Well, and, you know, speaking of Mox, we might as well move in this direction next, Dominic. Mox had a pretty nice little match between himself and Cesar Bonini.
Yeah.
Bononi, rather. Uh-huh. I thought it told a good story of the classic, like, big guy who can't be taken off his feet right away versus a smaller, more tenacious guy. And, you know, John Moxley ultimately gets the win by choking that big bastard out.
So,
I thought it was cool. I think that Cesar is very green. I think that he needs more work outside the, like, well, in the ring, but outside off of national television in the ring. You know, a guy like that with his size, seemingly with his athleticism, I think that he could really be somebody.
Yeah. Well, I really liked selling in the match actually. And like, you know, just the body language he gave off in a lot of ways. And the fact that him and Moxley, like he stood toe-to-toe with Moxley in a lot of ways. They even had a commercial break, like a picture-in-picture in there. So I was like, okay, they're getting Cesaro over a little bit more than I was expecting even. I thought this was going to be a quicker match than what it was, but it actually played out a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, from a work standpoint, yeah, Cesaro could use some more time in the ring. But like I thought too, like from a – he's conveying himself, you know, as an identity, establishing an identity. And that I think it helped too to have like – Namath. What's his first name? My God,
Ryan Nemeth.
At the you know a line, and then JD Drake too, who I really like his look and everything as well.
Absolutely.
So setting that up, and that also established JD Drake is going to be challenging Darby Allin next week for the TNT title on Dynamite. So that should be interesting.
Yeah, I saw that. I thought it was pretty cool too. Apparently, we're also getting Jurassic Express versus. Versus Bear Country, which could go one way or the other. Could be super
sponsored by Kong versus Godzilla.
Yeah, well, that I mean, a lot of silliness there. Let's move on to the biggest bit of silliness of the night. Something that I want to get all the negative out of the way so I can start focusing on the positive.
Okay,
dude, Arcade Anarchy sucked.
Okay, all right. I was curious what your thoughts were going to be. A lot of the feedback on social media was that people really liked it and they thought it was fun. Like that's the majority of the feedback I saw on my Twitter timeline. I was kind of in between. There was some stuff I liked.
There were good moments. There were good moments. I will say that Miro came off like a unstoppable monster, which is what he should be.
Exactly. There was some cringe stuff though. The whack-a-mole mallet I did not like.
Dude, Kip Sabian selling being thrown through what was clearly styrofoam, and he sold it like he got hit by a fucking train. It was just ridiculous. It was absolutely heinous. I hated it. That sucked. At least Miro was using somewhat dangerous looking weapons at times. Yeah. You gotta give him that. He was like using the barricade. I was the spot. There were two spots that really caught my attention. One was Miro beeling Orange Cassidy on the outside. Yeah. Looked like he threw him 20 feet and he just landed the smack on his back, which was awesome. And then the return of Chris Statlander and the subsequent hitting of the plexiglass into the face of Penelope. I was like, there's the best spot I've seen all night. That was good.
You love Chris Statlander too, and she's back, man.
Yeah,
I was curious. That's what made me think about, like, oh, I wonder what Mark is going to feel about this match. He's a big Chris Statlander guy. So
I mean, she hit that thing about as perfectly as you can hit something like that and get it to hit somebody safely in the face. Mm-hmm. So like she did it perfectly. Penelope sold it perfectly. So I was like, there it was. That was the best thing I've seen so far.
Dooku driver through the air hockey table.
Yeah, that was something. But you know, talk about a Chekhov's gun, that air hockey table on the outside.
Dude, I didn't see it.
What's gonna happen there? Oh, I saw it earlier.
Did you see? I didn't even see it. So like I was like, where the hell did that air hockey table come from?
here's the other thing is like we're just having this Arcade Anarchy match. Like, oh, guess what, guys? In 2 weeks, we've booked an Arcade Anarchy match. Like they're just saying, like, you know, we booked a ladder match in 2 weeks. No, it's like that's right. That old chestnut, Arcade Anarchy.
Remember when Harley Race and Terry added when the
Arcade Anarchy is the new Yappa Pie Indian strap match, dude.
At least it's not Judy Bagwell on a pole.
That could always be worse. Well, you know what? That's right up there with Judy Bagwell on a pole, if we're being honest. That's right.
No, I wouldn't go that far. I would not go that far at all. I thought this match, like, from the developments in it, I thought it was a good match. But I will say, I wasn't like how it played off at the end. Like, it kind of seemed unfair to Miro and Kip, you know? I mean, you know, obviously, like, Penelope was doing some dastardly stuff, and then Chris Statlander leveled the playing field. But then who shows up but Trent and Sue? And, like, so the scales were outweighed, and, you know, still Miro overpowered everybody. Like, from what you could see, like, Miro was going to win that match, you know?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that, like, Trent makes his big return with his mom. He makes his big return and Miro is just like, oh, I'll handle this situation. And he kind of does.
He kind of does. Like, he's like, I know, everybody.
another 235-pound human coming at me. I'll be fine. And he just addressed it. So again, that's the right thing to do though. Miro is like, you know, there's not a lot of dudes like him just out there walking around. So like the fact that they have him in this company, they need to take advantage of it. Kevin Davis writing in, are you okay? How's your day today? We're doing great. How are you? Thanks for joining us. Appreciate you you guys being here.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, in any case, I like how Miro came off at the end. I like that even when he got put through the table, he didn't do the job. Because like the idea is that Miro's got to lose to Orange Cassidy here in some way. Yeah, Orange Cassidy's got to get a little one-up so that we can inevitably see this clash, which they've kind of been building toward, which is going to be a one-on-one match between Miro and Orange Cassidy, in which, of course, Miro should go over.
He should. Like, well, I don't know about that. I mean, if you're going to have a one-on-one match, I don't think it would be beneficial though to have Orange Cassidy job out to him though either. You know, I think it's kind of a hard, if you're going to continue that feud, I don't know. You have to really build that thing and
well, what needs to happen, Dom, is like, okay, it's looking like the best friends are like back and looking pretty strong. So he needs to be pissed off, get rid of Kip, and then he needs to come after his butler there. What's his name? Chuck Taylor.
Charles.
He needs to come after Charles and just embarrass him, just completely rip him to shreds. Then he needs to come after Trent, embarrass him, rip him to shreds. And then he needs to go after Orange Cassidy. And in my opinion, rip him to shreds. I know you're a huge Orange Cassidy guy.
And I think there's just so much more there's a big ceiling for Orange and there's a big ceiling for Miro still. And like
going to kill Orange to take a loss to Miro.
If you do it the right way, I think it would be all right.
But, that's the thing, Dom, is that Miro should be starting to position him for like, okay, he needs to be facing Moxley, he needs to be facing Cody, he needs to be facing Kenny Omega. And the way that you do it is have him start to beat the crap out of everybody on the roster.
I almost think though that that if you're gonna do it, like if you're gonna want to push, obviously you want to push Miro and make him a bigger star than who, like, than where he's at right now. I almost say just move on from this whole angle, like completely. Like, you have Orange Cassidy move on, have Miro move on, and have them go against something else. Because I think if you ultimately put them on a crash course with one another, I don't think you'll win in one form or fashion. But the other person, I don't think will benefit.
I mean, how does it hurt to have a guy who probably weighs less than me in Orange Cassidy take a loss to this gargantuan man who looks like he'd hold up just fine in a fist fight with like somebody in the UFC? You know what I mean? Like, I don't see how that hurts Orange Cassidy. So Colton, he appears to be from Pensacola, and also he seems to be in distress. Help 911. Colton, on your phone. Dig that up if you aren't being stabbed or assaulted in some way. Go ahead and grab your phone and hit that emergency call button, dude. If you need help, holy smokes! Breaking news on Two Dynamite Dudes. You know who really needs 911 is Miro, because they have buried him in AEW so far. But hopefully, you know, this is them making him look like a real badass. This is the start of something good. Colton, let me also say that if you are in need of 911, you should probably get off the Twitter.
On YouTube.
Okay, let's get rid of YouTube or Twitter. Let's get off the phone for a minute, unless you're going to be calling for help.
Call, yeah, do something. I don't know what's going on.
So I don't expect
that kind of interaction on today.
If I was to call 911 right now for Colton, what would I even say?
Well, Colton A, Pensacola. Hey,
so Colton A in Pensacola appears to need some assistance. Mm. Colton, I hope that you're just messing with us. I hope you're okay, dude.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's hammer on though, Dominic.
We're live, pal.
All right. Hey, how about that vignette with Darby Allin and Sting, with the focus being on Matt Hardy?
Yeah, that was crazy. I liked it. I think I walked across that bridge too when I was in Jacksonville.
Yeah.
So it was a neat little thing. It was short, and you know, I think it kind of mixes things up a little bit with Sting. And just kind of, you know, it doesn't, we didn't see him on television this week, like in Daly's place. So it gives a little more variety. And, you know, I think people shouldn't have so much varietal expectations with Sting too, because like, sure, he's, at least we're getting him. I think we talk about this every week. I'm just happy we have Sting. So it's like, if you try to angle it in different manners or fashion, I think that's the way to do it, honestly, you know?
Yes. So I thought that the imagery was really cool of Sting just being out at the night with Darby Allin. You know, they're just like out and about, and Colton, he's gone. Come on, man. I was hoping you're gonna put that banner at the bottom. Call FBI.
Colton, man.
But anyways, I just thought the imagery of those two, like the idea of those two out skulking around at night with like their face paint on, it kind of cracked me up. But it was also just like, man, these, like, imagine seeing those two, like not knowing who they were. Like, you'd be like, okay, I'm going to stay the fuck away from those two. They look like a couple of psychos over there on that side of the bridge. I'm going to remain on this side of the bridge. And then they were throwing the money over the bridge, at which point I may have crossed over to the bridge.
Would you jump to the bridge? Would you jump to that? It was quite the jump, Marcus.
Well, I'll tell you what a disappointment it would have been when you realized that it was the Young Bucks, which I saw. Yes. So when he was wearing the Matt Hardy mask, he had like money dump on him, and one of them stuck to his shirt for a second. I was like, that's a Young Buck.
Is that Nick Jackson?
Yeah, it's like, that's not actual currency.
That's not an Andrew Jackson. That's a Nick Jackson.
So imagine jumping off the bridge and you just discover this. Wait a minute.
Jeez.
Yeah. So in any case, I thought it was kind of cool imagery. Hey, how else are you going to use Sting right now? Do you guys want him in an arcade anarchy match? Is that what you want?
Is that what you're looking for?
Is that what you want?
Is that where you want the icon?
I don't want it.
Marcus, I didn't ask you this. I was very upset Miro threw the Mortal Kombat 2 arcade cabinet.
That was hard to see.
Would you have a preference of what arcade cabinet got destroyed in that match?
You know, as long as it's not NFL Blitz 99, I think I'm good.
99, wasn't it?
It might have been 2000.
I think it was 2000. That's the big.
I don't remember. No,
is that your go-to arcade game? Really, Blitz?
Dude, Blitz was sweet.
Blitz was sweet, but I didn't even consider that one actually.
Oh, dude, Blitz! I love Mortal Kombat. Obviously, those were a lot of fun.
WrestleFest, obviously, it was good.
Yeah, I feel like it was very frustrating playing arcade games back in the day, though, because it was like you're so used to like the handheld remote, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, I've got a joystick, and then I've got these buttons, and what does this button do? And by the time you look up, the Honky Tonk Man is just beating the shit out of you in WrestleFest. so yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
Shake, rattle, and roll, motherfucker.
Right. Hey, so another vignette, we'll touch on this next. Jade is getting way better on the mic, dude. I have to give it up. I think that she must have taken like an acting class or something, because she's getting better. She's not great yet, but like she's improving, and man, with her physicality, her look, her ring presence, all she needs, that's kind of like the final missing piece. I kept saying like, hey, she just give her a manager to never put a live mic in her hand ever again. But like, hey, if she can actually pull it off, like she seems to have done this past week, then okay, I'm starting to see something.
Yeah, no, I really like her a lot. I think she's going to be great, and I think she's already showing signs of that. Like where, you know, not only from like just the quick squash match and stuff. Obviously, she's got some work to do, but she's a pure athlete, so she's able to get this shit done. She looks amazing. I think she's somebody that you can very much position high at the top of your women's division, because you have that balance of, you know, maybe she doesn't have the ring work and, you know, presence of like a Thunder Rosa or a Serena Deeb or a Britt Baker, but like you have her go up against those women and it elevates her to another level. So
I'll tell you what, if they booked Thunder Rosa versus Jade match right now, I would be nervous. I think I would be legit nervous watching that.
So, the stakes are very high for that, because like both stars are, again, I think to an extent that's like a Miro Orange Cassidy kind of situation, where I don't want to see, like, I don't think there's a benefit to either of them losing. There's a benefit to get one of them winning, but you know, I feel like, yeah, that's a tough predicament to put yourself in there.
Well, again, you know, it's all about how they approach it. Another lady or a couple of ladies who had the spotlight shown on them here. We got Tay Conti taking on the Bunny, and Nyla Rose was present.
Yeah.
Dominic, what did you think of all that?
I thought it was good. I thought it was another good highlight for Tay Conti. Like, she got to show her like judo stuff again. I think, you know, having her wrestle like a second week in a row on Dynamite is very good. You know, it just establishes her as one of the females to root for and cheer for. And yeah, I think it really, like Matt cutting that promo at the beginning for on behalf of the Bunny, and then, you know, her ultimately getting the win. I love the name of her finisher, Down the Rabbit Hole. I think that's an awesome finisher name for her. And yeah, I think it established the Bunny too as somebody that we got to keep tabs on too.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. You know, I think that having legitimate athletes and legit badasses such as Tay Conti on the program, you know, if hey, like, okay, so that's her style. It's like judo is her style. Then let's exploit it. You know, like let's have her doing judo stuff, judo throws to people and whatnot. Like, it seems like that they pulled the trigger on that, and it came off really well. The Bunny got a win, which I think benefited her. So yeah, that's a good match, solid match.
And I was curious, Tay Conti is almost, I don't want to say a substitute, but they kind of connected Dark Order with her a little bit. And like, she's already had previous, like, you know, connections with Dark Order, but she wasn't in Dark Order, you know? So, and them standing on the stage was something, but yeah, we getting spanked by it. Oh my God.
You're fucking up the live stream.
What is going on? Why are you?
In any case, Dominic, we can hammer on. So, Dominic, I just mentioned like having a shoot fighter doing their thing on the program. And we got to see a little bit of that with the QT Marshall punching Arn situation. And following that, all those guys came into the ring. And then we got to see Anthony Ogogo, who I thought was pretty damn interesting. He came in there with the old solar plexus punch.
The Jack Dempsey jab.
The Jack Dempsey solar plexus punch. I like how, you know, JR kind of sold it like, oh, that was a Jack Dempsey move. And then Excalibur's immediately like, yeah, I might have hit him in the liver, though. It's like, dude, shut the fuck up.
Wasn't necessarily a two-faced suicida there, Jim.
I was pretty close to a spleen, if you ask me, Jim. It's like, dude, shut the fuck up. Who cares? He hit him in the stomach. It looked like it hurt. So, but in any case, I mean, everybody there, all those guys that are aligned, like, I was not interested in this match at all. I did not give a damn about QT.
You said Marshall. That last week.
Right. And mm-hmm. I love Cody Rhodes. So theoretically, I should be jacked up about seeing Cody Rhodes wrestle live. But seeing him against QT Marshall, I was like, I don't care about this one iota. But, like, I'll tell you what, the end was pretty compelling. You know, you've got these guys, all of whom that aligned with QT Marshall, they all look like a bunch of badasses.
Nick Camarado, you had, oh my gosh, what's the guy's name? Aaron Solo, and then, yeah, a go-go there. It's, how do you think, where do you think they're going to go with this? Obviously, like, QT, I like that sucker punch he gave to Arn. Like,
yeah, it was just kind of out of nowhere. And Arn mm-hmm. took a bump for probably the first time in 20 years.
he wants to use those very seldom when I talked to him the one time. He was like,
Yeah. He doesn't have a ton left on his bump card. So it was cool getting him, seeing him take one. And, you know, it's look, QT Marshall right now, he's not an interesting person to me. But I think that if you surround him with interesting people and have him kind of be the guy who's pushing the button with these mm-hmm. interesting people, I think that, you know, we could actually go somewhere with it.
And you know what? Like, it's kind of fits his role, too, because he's, you know, a trainer. So, like, if you're putting him in that position of, like, almost like an oracle in a way, like, kind of like into, like, Batman, you know, where it's somebody behind the scenes almost kind of pulling the strings and stuff like that, it makes a lot more sense, I think, to do it in that regard. And, like, what they – how they positioned him, too, in the match is, like, they said he couldn't compete with Cody. Basically, like that was I think they said that flat out, actually. Like,
they were basically like saying, like, oh, well, you know, he must have been up all night nervous about this match.
And like, he didn't get entrance music. He didn't get, you know, any pomp and circumstance. And then Cody came in and was like he had him in the crossroads and let go. Like he had him dead to rights right there. Showed him that he could stomp on his head that one point, too. They did not put like QT over as like a viable competitor. So I'm just curious, how they're going to handle it, you know, because one thing too, like that you can mention is that these guys have not been positioned like Nick Camarado, Aaron Solo and Ogogo haven't been big players on Dynamite. Like they've made their appearances on Dark and Elevation and stuff, but they have not been a factor on the television. So it's like, we're not familiar with them. I know who they are and you may know who they are, but a lot of the viewers don't. So it's like, how are we getting introduced to them? We need to be introduced to them. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, Nick Camarado had one match as far as I know.
Against Moxley.
Yeah. Did the job for Moxley, but like the dude looks like $1 million. He built like a brick shit house and you know, he's got like this
like
real
Tampere Firpo.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, I think that, again, you use these guys right. And sort of like you said, where it's like they even said during the match, like, what has QT Marshall been training these guys to do? So I thought that was pretty interesting, compelling stuff. And, you know, if they do it right, could be fascinating.
And I like the aspect that he sold, like, oh, my God, I made a mistake. But then, like, you kind of you see the true colors come through when, you know, everybody gangs up and attacks, you know, and takes everybody out.
I wasn't crazy about the whole, like, oops, I made a mistake, because it's like, so the Gun Club gets in there and they're like, what the hell? It's like, dude, if somebody punched an older guy that I really liked, wouldn't you just like run at them? Like I'd be coming at them with like a fucking flaming 2x4.
Shock, Marcus, shock. You didn't expect it.
He's my friend.
Family. And he just did that to Arn, the enforcer, the coach.
I guess. I don't know. It's I thought it was fine. Let's see if they can polish that turd called QT Marshall.
Wow. Harsh.
Sorry. I'm just kidding. I don't find him interesting, dude. I just don't. I think that he's a good technically sound wrestler. He doesn't have it, but surround him with people who do have it, and I think that you could get him over.
I think you got him in the right spot. Like, I really do. And I think, I think even if he doesn't, I don't think he has to really show that too much more character, honestly, to get this over. Because, like, if he's kind of like that guy that's kind of like soulless in a way, it kind of adds to his ability to get a faction over that has a whole lot of personality.
And maybe, I mean, if they do it smart, they can leverage this whole he doesn't have it thing where it's just like, where basically that could make him more of a heel, where it's like, you know, look, this guy's getting all these opportunities. He doesn't deserve them.
Honestly, that's, and they're leaning into that. Like they're leaning into that, like the, whether it's the entitlement or nepotism or things like that, where it's, they're leaning into that and making, and that's kind of like a thing that people won't like about QT and stuff. So it's like you do that and you position him in the fashion of like, yeah, like, or, and like this bitter guy that maybe doesn't have that vibe or anything like that. You play into that and you can get these guys over and you can make them a strong faction. Almost, Marcus, like I was kind of thinking, I was said in the WrestleZone Facebook chat, like Varsity Club, like a new Varsity Club you can kind of do.
Sure. Hey, I'm fascinated. So let's see where it goes. Dominic, I've got two more things to talk about here.
All right, let's hear them.
One of them is was one of the most fascinating. These are, in my opinion, the two real highlights of the evening. One of which was the Inner Circle brawl with the Pinnacle. In wrestling, we see a lot of backstage brawls. It happens all the time. But this one, dude, this felt like it had the same sort of vibe to it as I would get when I would see like a brawl break out at the bar when I was in college. Right. Where it felt like real and it felt like these people were really trying to hurt each other. So I thought that was really cool. Dax Harwood may have been the MVP of that because he got busted open, wound up needing stitches, but he got busted open. He was bleeding like crazy. And like kind of trying to beg off.
Yeah, I saw that too. That was like kind of chilling.
Yeah, it's because he's like such a hard ass, but it looked like he was trying to beg off and they just had no mercy. So I thought that was really cool.
It was a wise choice on Ortiz's part to wear a white tank top too.
Yes, it was. Cash Wheeler, it was interesting seeing him fight because like he got thrown down, but then he kicked the guy away and got back up. And it was just like, it looked like a real fight. If somebody threw you down and was coming at you, you'd reach back and kick him and then try to stand up and come after him. And it was like, it came off like an actual fight. Chris Jericho with MJF, he was like pushing his head toward the toilet. And I was like, get his head in there. Like, I was so excited. I was like, do it. He got his head into the toilet, which I thought was great. Threw him through that cooler, Pepsi, which I thought cooler. I thought it was a great spot. It actually reminded me a little bit of the spot with Chris Jericho and Goldberg in Elimination Chamber where Goldberg speared Jericho through the glass. Mm-hmm. Reminded me of that because it was just like the seamless, like put his head right through it. Yeah. I just thought it was really cool. It was a fun brawl. What do you think?
Yeah, I liked it, man. I liked it a lot. It kind of it helped with the pace of the show too, kind of get a little variety. Somebody made a very, very good comparison to like what it reminded them of. I wish I could remember it, but it was pretty spot on. I like their kind of new look that they have too. I kind of hope they keep that kind of vibe where it's like, all right, they fucked with them and now they're kind of getting a little bit more serious, you know?
Well, I mean, look, yeah, the version of the Inner Circle that we've been seeing for a long time has been like the silly, goofy, like having good time, silly fun.
Inner circle. Go to the Vegas and find Hornswoggle fucking in a diaper and all that stuff. Now
it's been stupid and it's been annoying, but now it's like, okay, fresh paint of coat, on them. And
is that the Yoda way version of saying
that's how Bruce Pritchard says it.
Oh, okay.
But give them a fresh coat of paint, let them go away for a little bit and come back. And just like, let's go back to the basics and fundamentals here.
Well, next week, we're going to hear from Jericho. What do you want to hear him say?
I want to hear him say exactly what I just said. Like, I'm done goofing around. I'm done being silly so I can amuse the audience. Like, when I first came here as AEW champion, it was because I took this seriously. And I've been resting on my laurels, and that's done.
Mm-hmm. You know? I think, too, it builds – it's already, like, you know, we talked on weeks on end, like, is the Inner Circle done? Should they split them up? And, like, you were even on the side of, like, yeah, they should split them up. It's time. Like,
it was just turning to silly crap.
Yeah, and so now this, like, builds them back up immediately. Like, and you want to see, like, you know, Sammy and Jericho, like, be buddies again and, like, work together and certain things like that where you have a lot of options that you can do. And obviously, Santino Ortiz should really shine in this, you know, moment. And, like, you know, you're building them as a tag team again, you know, a viable tag team where you have them going up against the Dax and Cash and stuff. And so you have them in the mix and putting them back as like top competitors that you want to see have those belts eventually too. So sets them up really well. And yeah, I'm curious how Hager's going to fit in the mix a little bit too. I'm like, we don't really see him ever, whether it was Jack Swagger or here as a babyface. So I'm curious how he's going to do in this role as well.
Yeah. I mean, naturally he should be a heel, right? He's this real big guy. Kind of a brute, you know, easy to dislike or easy to kind of fear. Mm-hmm. So like he fits the heel mold, but you know, I don't know. It's could be interesting.
Could be. Yeah, very much.
Well, Dom, the most interesting part of the entire night was the opener of the night. And that's Christian Cage taking on Frankie Kazarian. Holy smokes. What a match. Let's get your thoughts on it.
Dude, I tweeted this out. Like, when that match started, I was like, I got chills when Christian's music hit and, like, walked out for the first time. Because that's his first time he, like, had a match in 7 years. And, you know, for them to kick off the show like that, you know, it felt, like, big. It felt big. And, like, Christian, like, it just took me back, too. Because, I mean, I think, like, it's been, you know, I think probably 7 years since I've seen Christian actually wrestle. So it took me back. All his spots just reminded me. I was like, oh, I remember Christian doing that. I remember him jumping out of the ring, slapping somebody. I remember him, like, the different spots of him hitting that he did. Frog splash, you know, all
rolling
that.
Rolling DDT.
Those were all Christian signature stuff. And so it was cool to see that. And it was cool to see Frankie Kazarian. Like, they worked like a veteran match right there. And Dynamite's been very good at opening their shows and with a different variety of matches and stuff like that. And this was a good one, man. I really liked it. And, Christian, he gave his own match, I guess, a B+. What do you think?
I thought it was great. I thought it was an excellent match. By the way, I noticed that Christian's tights, they look like his old school tights, right? Mm-hmm. With like the giant blotchy thing on the side of it. But then also I was like, does that say Edge at the top of his tights? But but I realized it says Cage. But like the font of it, it sort of makes it look like it says Edge. So is that a little shout out to his buddy Edge? I just thought that was really cool.
Interesting. See, I thought it. I only saw an R or something, and I was like,
at the top of that design, it says Cage, but it looks a lot like it says Edge.
Okay, because I was thinking he was referencing his real name, like Riso, like Jay Riso.
Oh no, yeah, you'll see it. Next time he wrestles, take a harder look. But I thought it was great. It just goes to show that like fundamentals in pro wrestling, like it's just like playing basketball, right? You don't have to be a great athlete, but if you follow the fundamentals and pay attention to the fundamentals, you won't miss a beat. And Christian's that. So look, in WWE, which was, I haven't seen much of Christian's TNA stuff. All I've really seen of Christian is him as Captain Charisma in WWE, and then, of course, the tag team guy in WWE. Yeah. WWE always positioned him as almost like a secondary character for the most part. Like, basically, like, just Edge's buddy, a good job guy, like a good hand. Like, he was always in that sort of role. I never really got to see him as, like, this kind of, like, badass, like, technical phenom Christian. So now I'm seeing it in AEW, and I'm just like, dude, I'm a bigger Christian fan after that match, a way bigger Christian fan than I was going in. He didn't do anything phenomenal, did he? He didn't do any crazy tope suicida.
Nothing wild. Yeah.
Didn't have to do any backflips. There were no tables or chairs involved. It was just like Christian wrestling a really good match against a good competitor.
Yeah, I think the fact that he wrestled like a 16-minute match, like, supplemented all that. And I prefer to see those types of matches than, you know, the crazy, you know, crazy spot matches, you know, that go on.
No doubt about it.
Yeah. I think balancing him, having somebody as smart as Christian have the ability to have some more creativity and express his creativity in a smart fashion on a mainstream television product. You balance his ability to cut like a promo like he did the week before with that interaction he did with Kaz. You balance that with his ability to work in the ring and the smarts that he brings. Plus, you mix in newer talent with him. It can be a very, very beneficial mix for AEW.
I mean, dude, I'm ready for Christian to start making his world title run, which it seems like is what he's after. You know, eventually he's going to come after Kenny Omega. Like, I hope he goes over. I'm pumped up about Christian right now.
There's plenty of time to build to that too. I think honestly they should really, really take their time with it. I would want to almost see that happen like at the end of summer kind of thing, or even later. Like I don't want to see that culminate at Double or Nothing. I want to see that go further and further. You know, I'd like to see them build it out for almost the better part of 2021 before we see him get that shot. You know,
sure. Yeah. Let's be like a slow build, but man, when it happens, you know, you've got these two Canadians. It's kind of like the this great technician of the old days, and like the guy who's like the top guy of today. You know, it feels like it would be fun. I love the direction that they're moving in.
And Kenny and Christian interacting with somebody like a Don Callis too would be very fun as well.
Oh, it'd be very entertaining. So I'm pumped up about it. More excited about Christian than I've ever been in my time as a wrestling fan. And by the way, Dominic, I wanted to know. I actually wrote this down when JR said it. During this match, JR said on live television about his own promotion, he said some of the younger wrestlers watching can only hope that they'll be this fundamentally sound in their careers. And I was like, man, that says it all. It says it all.
JR said it on the podcast too with Conrad Grill and JR. He said, you have minds Tony Schiavone is that you have minds like Christian and Big Show.
There. No, that was JR.
That was JR? Okay. So you have minds like Christian and Big Show there. You have to pick their brains. Like, and you have to like make the most of that because they're so smart. They're gonna add so much to the product. And he's right. He's right. Like, I mean, you haven't seen have you watched any of Elevation yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so like Big Show adds to commentary. Like he's smart. He's psychologically smart on commentary. Add some humor. Him and Tony have chemistry already because they know each other and stuff. But like, I think that's going to develop. He shows the smarts there. Christian shows the smarts in how he wrestled in the ring on Wednesday, and then just cutting that brief, simple interaction with Kaz the week before was very good too. So it's like they're smart. I think having guys like that, they're not like they could be main eventers. A lot of the times in WWE, we didn't see them as main eventers because they weren't positioned that way. But they're so smart that they can add not just a ring presence to you, but a backstage and further wisen a lot of the younger talent up.
No doubt about it. You know, I know that a lot of people look at it as like WWE light when we keep bringing in these old WWE guys. But the thing is, it's like, man, you can't pay enough to get that kind of intelligence and experience in the building. Look, I know that if I was on that card, if I was a young wrestler on that card and the opening match, the curtain jerker was Christian and Kaz going out there and absolutely tearing the house down, I'd be almost like embarrassed to go out afterwards. Like, I'd be like, how am I going to beat it? Like, what can I do to be as good as they just were? So it's all they're doing is upping the ante in AEW.
Yeah. It's, I like it, man. I don't think, that criticism of like, oh, it's WWE light and stuff like that. It's not like, and I think a lot of people are positioned to have the mindset of like, oh, this is how WWE books things. And this is what we're going to see from this, because this is what we're used to seeing. This is AEW is not WWE, and like, you know, there's a different like mentality and a different way they tell stories. Like, you know, you look, obviously there's holes and there's stuff that needs to be worked on, but there's like stuff over that you see over the course of time that ends up paying off at the end. And you don't get that with WWE. You have minds like Christian, Paul White, JR, D Malenko, Jerry Lynn, the list goes on of who's like, you know, who can Tully Blanchard, who JR was like, no, who Tony said, like, talent should really go to him, even if they're intimidated by him. Like, you know, there's somebody that the young talent needs to really pick the brain of. And like, he's right. But like, you have all that. And you mentioned this yesterday too on WCW Rewritten, is that it's like WCW 95, like right now at this point in time, like AEW is at that point. So it's like, yeah, I think they're moving along. And feel free to criticize it, because you like, that's your, as a fan, you're able to do that, you know, but obviously I think what we're getting here is very good and very entertaining. I will say, lots taken, a lot of stuff they put in the 2 hours. Like, if you sit back and think about it, like you can assess it all in your head, but it's still a lot to take in for a 2 hour show. Do you agree with that, or how do you feel?
Yeah. Well, you know, let me say, as I booked WCW Rewritten, it's like, you know, there's so much talent on the roster, just as there is with AEW. It's like you it's like taking a fucking shoehorn every week and just like fitting it all in there. You know, and you can do it. You've just got to be artful about it, but also you've got to let some stuff go. You know, like, yeah. if you've got some people there who like you were hoping for more out of, who you just aren't seeing it with, like, relegate them to Elevation, relegate them to AEW Dark, if that's still a thing. I don't even know if it is.
Yeah, it is. So they have Dark on Tuesdays and then Elevation on Mondays.
Cool. So, do that, and like, let's just. That's the only way to go about it. And hey, if these guys are getting themselves over on these other programs, bring them up to the main roster. But in the meantime, you know, focus on where your money.
The thing too is, I would really, and it's tough because you have so much talent on the roster that you have to like try to, you want to get their shot and further storylines and stuff like that. Because listen, we didn't see anything, I don't think, from Hangman this week, right?
No Hangman, no Lance Archer.
No, yeah, exactly. And I really think like you want to keep that fresh in people's minds. I think that like it would really be beneficial to them. So like, how many stories do you think had going on? We covered what, like 7, 8, something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
I would try to tighten it up and even like, you know, really think about like 4 big points you want to get home in this show in the course of your 2 hours. Like have like stuff circle around it. But like, tighten it up a little bit and try to work out where you can keep things fresh in the people and people's minds week in and week out, every Wednesday specifically, not just on, you know, Elevation or Dark, but specifically on Wednesday nights, where you keep those things fresh, but like hammer home some really big points and overall like make those stand out more than the other stuff, but still, you know, get what you need to across. It's a tough balance, but like, you know, especially for a 2 hour show, but it's doable. And I think it would be beneficial in the long run to when you do get those talents, when you do shift talents around and have like, quote unquote, somebody maybe leave the territory for a bit and come back. Like you'll learn a new hold, whatever. You get those new talents in the mix, it'll make their moments more significant too, because they're not all jam packed into a 2 hour show when you have like 10 stories going on, or like you're trying to squeeze 30 people into your evening for viewers, where it's like, okay, I want to know who this Aaron Solo guy is, but I'm also supposed to keep track of what the Young Bucks are doing with Laredo Kid and the Lucha Brothers, and hey, what's going on with everybody in the Pinnacle and the Inner Circle. It's like, it's a lot to take in. So it's tight. I would like to see it just like honed in a little bit more. I think overall it's a good show, and I'm still able to, like, you know, when I'm done with it, I'm still able to think back and like remember stuff, but it's heavy duty. It's a lot of stuff.
It is. But overall, a pretty decent program. Dom, you ready to move on to Meltzer ratings and MVPs?
Yeah, Marcus. Do you want to start with the Marcus Meltzer rating, or would you want to give the MVP first?
I'm going to do the Meltzer rating first. I'm going to give this one a 5.8. Wasn't great. Wasn't bad. There were some bad moments, some very cringy moments. There were some really awesome moments, you know. But I'll just move right into my MVP. It's Christian Cage, man. Tore the house down. First match back in 7 years. And he looks like he has not missed a damn beat. There is no ring rust on that man.
No, and they were saying that, too. It's like, I think he was saying, like, he doesn't. Yeah, I think he tweeted out something or something that like nothing with ring rust or something like that. And yeah, you know, trying to think if Christian's probably my top one. I'm trying to think if there's somebody else that really, really popped for me. You know, I thought, you know, we mentioned Miro was really good, but yeah, I really think, and Kaz, I don't think we didn't talk too much about Kaz's performance.
Yeah, that was not really fair to him. He did great. You know, we all knew what the outcome of this match was going to be going in. Obviously Christian's going to go over in his first match back. But Kaz did the job admirably and, you know, it's hard to pick a better dance partner.
And you know what? Like, again, I think it speaks to his ability to be a singles wrestler too. I think he's not somebody that should be like, you know, okay, here he is for this week. We're not going to see him again for a while. I think he should really still be in the mix in a lot of things. And you can certainly put him in a angle where he's, you know, whether he's like the new member. We didn't even talk about this. It was like they teased the Team Taz dissension again. Like he'd be a cool replacement for like Brian Cage at some point, or somebody to mix it up with Brian Cage. Like,
sure.
Just some cool stuff you can do.
A lot of fun directions to move in. Also looks like Ethan Page is now aligned with Scorpio Sky. So that'll be maybe cool. We'll see how that goes. So a lot of moving pieces for Tony Khan to keep track of, but admirable job this week. I thought the show was fine. Let's cut the bullshit, stupid gimmick matches. And I think that we're going to see a much better program.
I'm curious though, because like we said, I mean, the ratings this week were down. It was like 700K or something like that, and it was down from the week before. I don't know the details of what the numbers were exactly besides that, but NXT's catching up, and now NXT, Marcus, if you haven't heard, is moving to Tuesday nights.
I did hear that. So kind of WWE has admitted defeat here at the hands of AEW, the show that they viewed as secondary originally. So much for that.
I think that's a pretty good I think there was certainly that air competition. Like WWE did not want to say, well, hey, like they were there first on Wednesday nights and things like that. But obviously they were gunning for AEW and to put AEW out of business quick. That was
their goal. I mean, it was clearly intentional. That was their hope.
And, you know, now I will say, like, if NBC Sports wasn't folding, I think we would still see NXT on Wednesday nights. I don't think Vince would want to give up the ghost. But like since NBC Sports is folding and NHL has a new home with ESPN but it's still going to be a property of NBC as well. You know, we're going to see some NHL is going to be getting some replacement time for that. So that played a factor into that. So, you know, I don't think it's necessarily them admitting defeat, but I think we already know who won in the first place. So,
yeah.
I'm curious now that AEW is going to have its own Wednesday night all by itself. I wonder if they're going to get more or what they're going to do to try to get more.
Well, you know, you've got to just up the ante every week. Sorry guys, my cat is
going nuts.
Struggling. Right now she's got like a fur ball or something. And she's like 2 feet away from me.
She's legit sounding like Luna Vachon right now too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they've just got to up the ante every week, man. You know, and by that I mean like let's keep bringing in fresh faces, new talent, you know, like throwing shit against
the wall. A lot of talent already on there too.
A lot of talent, but there's a lot of talent that you aren't using on a regular basis too. Let's make your secondary shows a little bit more entertaining. Let's get some other stars down there on those other shows, and let's bring in some fresh faces because ultimately
that's the problem, though. Marcus YouTube is a new way of not a new way, but it's like becoming a more accessible and acceptable kind of thing in the mindset of people. Like, oh, hey, you know, I'm going to watch this live streaming on YouTube or whatever, you know? So like, but it's still like, it's still a tough audience. It's, you're not getting as big as an audience.
No, you're not.
You know, not.
But if these talents can get over on Elevation, you think about bringing them up. But I don't know. It's the thing that made WCW interesting back in the day, and the thing that helped them to compete with WWE was you didn't know what was going to happen from week to week. So by that I mean, like, let's get some title changes on Dynamite. Let's maybe once a month, you know, as a formula, bring in a new talent. You know, just there's little things that you can do that aren't gonna you know, go crazy as far as like filling your roster.
Yeah. It's going to be a very touch and go thing, especially when you don't have a live crowd there, or you do have a live crowd, but not as big as a live crowd as you typically would at this moment in time. So it's like, not only that, but it's just like, you have your own program now. You're the only lone program on there. I think it's going to be beneficial to both, not just AEW, but NXT, that they're on separate nights now. I think it's going to give us a true more gauge of where they both stand at and what they can do to improve. It'll give them more of a better assessment of what needs to be done on both products. So
now NXT is competing with with Impact, rather.
No, that's not true anymore, Marcus, because Impact next week is moving to Thursdays.
So we've got wrestling literally every day of the week.
Literally every day of the week, every Monday through Friday, you are getting wrestling. And then sometimes Saturdays you'll get a pay-per-view. Sometimes Sundays you'll get a pay-per-view. So,
man. That's a lot of wrestling.
That's a lot, Marcus. And not to mention, we also have MLW on Wednesday nights. And just a lot going down, man. If you had to pick another product, AEW is the only wrestling product you watch on a consistent basis, right?
Yep.
Where are you jumping to? What's your second in line if you on tap for you? Is it NXT? Is it MLW? Is it Impact? Where are you going to go next?
But I mean, if, you know, somebody said you have to choose another wrestling program to watch, probably either MLW or New Japan.
New Japan. Okay. Yep. Yeah, New Japan. So did you see their new Tokyo Bowl? What'd you think of that?
I thought it was weird. It looked like the looked a little bit like the old school Divas Championship.
Right, yeah, people are saying that.
Yeah, I thought it was fine. You know, I don't see anything to be up in arms about. What did you think?
That's my thing. People get really upset about how titles look, and I understand it. Like, I'm not a big fan. Obviously, I did not like the spinner belt because it was too hokey. Like,
I hate the new WCW title, or the new Intercontinental title. I mean,
oh, what it looks like now?
Yeah, I think it sucks.
And you know what? Like, I think I said this too on Twitter, is that you almost quote unquote reset the legacy when you do that with a title belt, because, like, you know. I always just think of, like, one of the coolest belts is WWF's, like, gold winged eagle belt, like the during the Bret Hart era and Hulk Hogan. I thought that's such a cool looking belt. You get rid of it, you know, around when the 90s roll around, late 90s and 2000s, and you go into the Attitude Era more. It's that it gets replaced, and like, it's just like it you have to almost reestablish it. It doesn't pack as much as the punch. So, like, you know, New Japan, that was a cool title, like world title. That looked like heavy duty, legit world title. I think it's beneficial that Kota has the new title. I think he's a star and he can reestablish it, but you got to reestablish those belts. So I don't necessarily take exception. Like, ultimately, I think it boils down to, like, I don't like titles getting redesigned. I especially don't like it when it kind of hurts the legacy of it. And I think that kind of goes hand in hand a lot of the time, unless you do a callback to something, like where you still keep that intact, that legacy intact, by having something that resembles the older version of that title or the history of your company in a lot of ways.
In my opinion, titles should never change.
I'm with you. Ultimately, I'm with you. I think that's,
yeah, I think that they should. I think the Intercontinental title should look the same way it did when Tito Santana, or not Tito, when Ricky the Dragon Steamboat had it.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the right Intercontinental title belt. Mm-hmm. Yeah, winged eagle. I think that would have been just fine through the years. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's, I don't know. It's, I'm not crazy about it when they change belts, but it's what it is, man. You push through it. You know,
I just don't see a reason to do it unless you're WWE. Like, if WWE does it, they do it to sell fucking merchandise. Mm-hmm. And like, even that, like, is short-term thinking, I think, in a lot of ways. So, you know,
it is because, like, you know, like, if you, let's say that you had a Seth Rollins figure before you had the title, that figure is going to sell. But now you've got a figure of him after he wins the title and he's got the winged eagle belt. These people might have a winged eagle belt, but they're saying like, I don't have a Seth Rollins with a winged eagle belt. So they'll go out and buy it. It's like, man, you can still capitalize on legacy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really hope, I don't think AEW is going to do it. I love the look. I think that's what the best looking world title right now is, that AEW's title.
Big platinum, yeah. Big
platinum, baby.
Yeah, it looks awesome. Dom, let's wrap it up.
Okay. Mark, how do they follow you on Twitter?
You can follow me at Marcus P. D'Angelo on Twitter. Also, please follow our other podcast, WCW Rewritten, which is at WCW Rewritten on Twitter.
Yeah. Marcus, do you want to give a little preview of what's to come here next week on Rewritten?
Nope, I'm not going to give anything away. I will say, however, that the feud between Eddie Guerrero and Bret Hart is heating up. And their respective gangs or stables, if you want to call them that, Los Latinos and the Heart Dungeon.
We're going to do a little poll and figure out if that's
we'll put up a poll and see if either the Heart Dungeon or the Heart Stampede is the right name for them. Yes. But yeah, so we've got that going on. We've got old versus new feud with the Wolfpack. Against not NWO Wolfpack, just Wolfpack, against the likes of Dusty Rhodes, Larry Zbysko, Ric Flair, Tully Blanchard, and Dean Malenko. A lot more going on too, Dominic. You guys have got to tune in to find out.
Yep, it's really interesting. Things are picking up, and new faces are showing up, and familiar faces are there, but in a different role in a lot of ways. So tune into that. You can follow me on Twitter at Dominic D'Angelo. You can follow WrestleZone on Twitter at WrestleZone.com. And yes, go to WrestleZone.com for all your wrestling news and needs. As far as interviews go, we interviewed Pat Tanaka and Paul Diamond, former tag team of Bad Company, as well as who else did we get going on here? I just interviewed Myron Reed, who had a big match on Wednesday night. MLW Never Say Never. I think I've had 3 interviews with Myron, maybe just 2, but he's always a great interview. He's a straight shooter. He talked about his mantra, fuck him, and it's perfect. It's what you want out of a wrestler, is that kind of attitude. And we talk about that too, and how he's developed that. So really, really cool conversation. He's also got a rap album coming out, Bangers Forever 2 in May. So good conversation we had, and more to come here on WrestleZone.com. So thanks, guys, for tuning in. And, hey, Marcus, we'll see them next week, right? This was good times. Live was good times. Even if we just got a lot of comments from Colton there.
Yeah. Comments. As soon as we get off here, I'm about to call the FBI, Dominic.
All FBI. Jeez. All right.
All right, guys. We'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in. Everybody says you're so messed up.